it's surprising as well. I mean, even I see on Twitter, like, people who are, you know, more advanced users still fall for these kind of scams, or more sophisticated scams, where they, you know, they're exposing their private key or seed phrases and things like this. Like, it's so yeah, there's a whole spectrum of issues there, and in the for users, for investors, for businesses. And I think that comes down to, there's still an overarching need for how do we make this whole space safer to participate in.
That is Ryan Chris, and this is episode 31 of the Blockchain Pro podcast. Welcome to episode 31 of the Blockchain Pro podcast. I'm Adriana Bellotti, and today's guest is Ryan Chris. Ryan works at BDO's Sydney Technology Advisory Practice and is their technical lead for blockchain and digital assets. He is a Bitcoin and crypto enthusiast and one of my favorite peeps when it comes to talking about all the tech things. Now it's your turn to get to know Ryan. Let's do it. Hi, Ryan.
Hey, Adriana. How are you going?
Good. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you.
Working from home as usual?
Yes. The home office is, here most of the time these days.
Yep. How's things been with you? All good?
Yes. Life-changing, actually. With some new family members this month. So I've had some time off, which has been lovely. And two new babies in the family, so
first time dad, right?
First time dad, so
congratulations.
Thank you. Learning, yeah, steep learning curve, but lovely, amazing experience at the same time. So
our listeners won't see this, but you don't look like you're sleep deprived at all.
I don't know, I don't think it hasn't hit me today yet, so there's like certain parts of the day where it will just like, you'll be like, oh, okay. I need a coffee and a rest or something like that. But it's, you've got me maybe at a good time. So
that's good. All right. So let's dive into it. Go back in time to, how did you decide to do what you do? What was your career story?
Oh, my career story. Yes. Where do we start? I guess I've been working at internet companies, I guess, for most of pretty much all my career, but and that's where it certainly started when I came out of university, working at ISPs in the early 2000s. So,
did you study computer science? What did you?
Management information systems.
Okay.
So there was a lot of days in a smelly Oracle lab where we're playing with databases, relational databases, and that kind of stuff, and putting together SQL statements to build databases about dragons and things like that, which you did back in the uni days. But yeah, it was sort of in that sort of tech space, and just after that, or just as I was finishing, is where I sort of landed a job at a company called Internode. And we were, helping Australians connect to the internet back in the early 2000s, and in particular ADSL and ADSL 2 Plus, which came a bit later. So, it was a pretty exciting period, because there was just such a large, I'm not sure what the percentage was, but it was a large percentage of, I'd say a sizable percentage of people who just weren't online. So it was cool working with customers to get them connected, and with a great service, and especially ISP as well at the time. So that was my first step, I think, into the world of technology and computers and networking from a career point of view. And it certainly kept me in that world to now.
And So, okay, so how does that evolve to what you're doing now? Let's talk about your current.
Yeah, so that phase of my career, I guess I've had a few different phases, but that was very much my telco ISP phase. And then after that, I've been basically working in consulting, so helping other businesses with their business challenges and problems and opportunities with a technology lens. So I've done that, doing that at BDO at the moment, where I've been for a couple of years, and previously as well, doing some of my own consultancy prior to that with SMEs working in, I guess, you know, looking at business process optimization, analytics, some of those transformation kind of projects, and some risk and security in there as well. So it's I've been in the consulting world for probably 5, maybe 6 years now, I think. So it's great.
Consulting world is an interesting world because you're not just working on one problem at a time, right?
Yeah, and that's the amazing thing about it. You get to speak to so many different clients who have their own unique challenges and aspirations. So you really get a good snapshot across particular industries. And it helps you sort of think, you know, what are some of the patterns here, some of the common problems as well, and common opportunities, and you can apply that to your next engagement as well, which is valuable for those people you're connected with.
And how did blockchain fit into all this?
So blockchain. So for me, blockchain starts with Bitcoin.
Yeah.
And I was thinking through the archives of my mind the other day to try to, because I've never really thought through this whole, you're sort of in it, right? You're just in it, and there's so much going on in blockchain and crypto and Bitcoin. But the journey for me started early 2014, and I can't remember what was the initial trigger, but I was working in a co-work space in Adelaide called Majorin, which was this kind of this dingy old place in a heritage listed building, which was really, really cool, had a unique culture, and there was a Bitcoin meetup. So I got to go to that meetup, and I think I'd been doing some reading at the same time, so I'm not sure of the exact timelines, but that was the first sort of connection to the Bitcoin community I had. And got me sort of thinking, well, you know, got me very confused as to what this thing was, which I think is
happening. All been there.
yeah. A common story, I think. But that's, you know, that goes to the nature of the technology, that it's comprised of 70 different things, be it, you know, cryptography or the economics of it or the distributed peer-to-peer networks. It's different elements, I think, and grasping all those things just takes time. So 2014 is where it started, but then I sort of lost it for a little bit because there was this initial enthusiasm, and then it was around when Mt. Gox happened. Mm-hmm. I think it was like February, March, and then there was a, you know, bit of a bear, then there was a bear market, so my attention sort of was drawn away from it for maybe a year, good year and a half. That were the initial beginnings. And then I really got into it probably 2016, when somehow my mind went back to it through the lens of alternate investments. And I think I was actually thinking about it as well. It's actually around this time 4 years ago, because it was around that US election cycle where markets were a bit volatile. I was thinking about, you know, hedging, like what's your alternate to equities, and there's gold and then there's Bitcoin. And I sort of gravitated in that direction. And then obviously from that point, we had some pretty crazy times in 2017 and all that's followed to this day.
2016, Ethereum was already like nearly a year old, right?
Yeah, that was, and I hadn't really, I mean, Ethereum, I really didn't really get exposed to. Probably again when I came back to Bitcoin at the end of 2016, but I didn't really know. So that was a whole other journey to understand programmable blockchains and what Ethereum represented. And that narrative has changed as well over the last few years.
So fast forwarding to 2020, are you the Mr. Blockchain at BDO?
If the word blockchain comes up or crypto or Bitcoin, you'll often hear my name or see my name on the same email or something like that. So I'm certainly a proponent in the organization to and that's something that I'm passionate about is helping people understand what Bitcoin is, what blockchain, crypto, digital assets are all about, and where they fit in to the market, really. I definitely do a lot of internal education, I guess, for BDO and helping people understand the different facets of digital assets and blockchain technology.
Without divulging any secrets, can you think of any interesting problems that people have come to you with that you said, oh, okay, blockchain may be a solution for that?
The most obvious ones are just some of the weird ICO ideas that were sort of coming up in 2017, 2018, and I don't know. Like there was, you could just sort of, by the time you got to the mid 2018, you could just sort of see through it. Like people would be coming up with like, why do you need to do this? There's no substance here. Like you're just trying to raise a bunch of money in a unregulated way, with a meaningless token. So I think those were some of the ones, and largely they've gone away. You know, there's a lot more mature thinking in the space these days, which is good.
If people realize that it's not as easy as it was supposedly.
It's the money, right? People are attracted to that psychologically, so they'll try to fit their solution around a problem that might not be there, or create a reason to raise some money for whatever reason. But
I was talking to someone and said, oh, I have this thing and I want to create a community and I think I need a digital currency and I wanted to create this and that. I'm like, mate, just use Bitcoin.
Exactly.
Lightning Network is coming, so that's going to make things easy. Have your own server, run your channel, just do that.
Yeah, it's quite interesting. Like, you can look back at that period and I think, should have those projects, should it have evolved how it happened? And in some respects, there was a lot of lost capital and people lost money, which is serious problems. But a flip side to it is that, well, there's a whole bunch of lessons learned through that process for all different participants in the industry. So maybe it was healthy to have that kind of event happen early on in the cycle for crypto when it did, and not later on. So it's maybe a growing pain, but obviously there's still a seriousness to it. So yeah, it's a core part, I think, of crypto history as we look back at this in the years to come.
And people still lose money because who hasn't received an email from, let's say, Kochi? Kochi, and I'm air quoting here, offering to, dip into his Bitcoin investments, which is clearly a scam, like many others, they're running around all the time. And if people are not informed, they can just easily fall for one of those.
Yeah, and it's surprising as well. I mean, even I see on Twitter, like people who are, more advanced users still fall for these kind of scams or more sophisticated scams where they, they're exposing their private key or seed phrases and things like this. Like there's a whole spectrum of issues there and in the for users, for investors, for businesses. And I think that comes down to there's still an overarching need for how do we make this whole space safer to participate in, to provide users with the confidence that they're not going to, that their funds aren't at risk, that they're not going to lose their capital by participating in these, whether it's financial services or other applications on a blockchain using digital assets. So there's a whole heap of work to do there, and that's multi-pronged, whether it's education and training through to better controls and security practices in applications themselves. So it's a multi-pronged thing. I think we're still far away from having a mature approach to that, where we get that next leg in adoption.
Well, you and I have an interesting 5 months ahead.
Yeah, we do. We do. It will be interesting to see. We're obviously on the cybersecurity working group for the National Blockchain Roadmap, which is really exciting, and that will be kicking off, I'm sure, soon.
Yeah, very soon.
And there's I'm not sure how many people. There's like 10 of us or so. Is there maybe?
I'm not sure how many as well, but I think it's about 10 in the main group plus a few key contributors.
Yeah, and I think it'll be an interesting conversation, and then bringing together the various ideas around blockchain and cyber into the working paper that we pulled together early in the new year. And there's probably a number of different things that will touch on around self-sovereign data and immutable data records and things like that, decentralized storage. So there's a whole, and that's the exciting thing I think about when you talk around blockchain and crypto. It's digital assets is probably the primary game at the moment and where the most value is accruing. But there's a whole other bunch of tech that's being built out that teams are iterating and innovating around, particularly in that Web3 space, and that's certainly a long game. But we're even seeing things like, we saw Filecoin launched this week and their endeavors to, incentivize the use of empty hard drive space through their token and having a marketplace for decentralized storage is quite novel. So there's a lot of things happening in that space.
I think Filecoin is really interesting because who has hard drive space these days? Everything is in the cloud. So does that mean that our hard drives are empty, or does that mean that we have tiny hard drives, and how are we going to play in that space?
Yeah, and look, I think this goes to the challenge of making a decentralized storage service production grade, right? Because even if you did have some hard drive space available on some laptop or desktop computer somewhere that you want to sort of rent out to the network, then you're sort of having to keep that online and provide the assurance that you're making that data available. So there's a couple of commitments there, I guess, to do, and how easy that is. I haven't played with Filecoin myself, but
I guess for Australians that would be quite hard because the NBN is shit. It drops out.
Yeah, well, you have.
How can you keep something online 24/7 if your connection isn't stable?
Exactly, and I'm not sure. Some of the I know on some of these decentralized storage platforms, like you put up collateral essentially, both in terms of the token, and you can be slashed in terms of the token if you don't provide those assurances as to the contract you entered into for providing that storage space, or maybe that's more on the hosting side, but there's intricacies there, I think, that just go to show it's very early, and these things are going to take quite a while to play out.
They will indeed. So with Bitcoin on that rise again, have you experienced like friends asking about it again? Because there's, you know, happens in seasons, right?
Yeah, it does. I have. I'm just trying to think, like, it's the price cycle. I have certainly through this year. I think both, obviously the crash in March, and then its immense recovery, they kind of both attracted attention, both to the depth of the retrace, and then also the rebound. So yeah, people ask, and I still think, and there's so many people who still don't know how to take that first step, but you know, you do need that. Sometimes you need someone there to help you through it. I think that's those first steps. And so I've certainly been on, you've probably been on, you know, on the phone to someone, and they've gone through, clicking through the sign up process and doing their KYC. It's it's different, right? And it's
I have a whole meetup about it.
yeah. And so I think there's, you know, a lot of people who are, we're still early, right? I'm not sure how many, be actually really good, like how many Bitcoin users would be in Australia. I don't know if you know that number, or how do we, you know, if you can quantify that somehow, maybe it's
2% is of the population. I think it's the number that Independent Reserve survey last year uncovered. I think that is it.
Mm. So it's still early. Like, there's still so many more people.
20% is a huge difference there. But anyway, this year's survey results are coming in, I think, November. So we're about to find out.
Cool. And still got friends who are. I mean, it's some friends who are very. You know, they're IT engineers, they're lawyers, they're very respected professionals, but they just don't really want to get on the Bitcoin train, bandwagon, whatever it is. But yeah, they don't see it.
How do you explain Bitcoin to those who are not really tech savvy?
How do I explain it? The simple term is it's the transfer of value over the internet. And you could say value's money. So I think that's the simple term. And then I sort of go deeper from there. Trying to stay away from the technical side, I think, is what we do these days. And it's more around some of the economics of it is really important. And that's, I mean, that's the foundation for, one of the key use case, you know, it's store of value use case, right? That it's 21 million coins with a fixed or a known monetary supplier. So I think that aspect is a key talking point. And then the comparing that back to how money works in the fiat world, I think is the comparison point, is that you don't have that transparency. You don't have that ability to verify like you do with Bitcoin, which makes it really unique.
I think, have you read the Bitcoin Standard?
I have, Saifedean, yes.
Yeah, so I'm hoping that maybe in the next 20 years, that's going to be our new monetary standard.
I think it'll be, I mean, this, the next, I mean, even the next 5 years, right, it's going to be, super interesting. I don't know if you call it currency wars per se, but you've got competing state interests, you know, competing sovereign interests with governments and the pursuit of central bank digital currencies. You've got private issuance of money.
Next year, that game is gonna like jump up. CDBCs, I think a lot of governments are looking into it. It's the hot topic. There are blockchain is like Algorand that allows you to do things like callbacks and, you know, leaking, and that makes a difference when you're talking about the whole population, right?
Oh, and that's what keeps me up at night reading, like, just blogs and in Discord chats and all kinds of weird things, is that there's just so much happening in the space. And whether that's the market innovating on open blockchains, or then, you know, sovereign nations trying to build their own moats with their own CBDCs. So I think there's just so much more to come, and that's why it feels like I can never learn. There's always more to learn, right? You probably likewise. There's always something to read. There's always another video to watch. There's always a new roadmap to review. There's always another white paper.
There's always a new book. Yesterday I went to the bookstore and I found this book called Crypto Communism.
All right. Is that a good thing, or is it, what is that?
I don't know, because I just bought it yesterday, so it's queued up.
Okay, interesting.
I'll let you know when I finish.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I don't know. Is that, you could read that in various ways, I guess.
Communism, as it was intended, was sort of hijacked by political systems. It wasn't intended to be a bad thing. It was intended to be a more fair economic model. But obviously it was hijacked by China and Russia, and, you know, we know what happened. So I don't know. I'm open-minded.
Yeah. Maybe it plays to the state control of money, which is... You know, some argue that we don't really have a market for money because we're bound to sort of one fiat currency per country, right? So maybe that's where the book is going. But yeah, I'd be interested in your summary. Yeah.
I'll read it probably over the next week or so, and then I can send it over to you.
Cool.
Awesome. So we're getting to the pointy end. Tell me, what advice do you have for the ones that are looking into blockchain from the outside and thinking, should I get involved in this?
Yeah, advice. What advice do I have? I think, firstly, blockchain is such a broad categorization of things, of technologies. I think the simplest way to get to a starting point on that is to, again, just go to Bitcoin. Read the Bitcoin white paper, go to a Bitcoin meetup, buy some Bitcoin, and particularly the buying bit, I think is quite important from a psychological point of view, because you're attached to it, then you have it, you're invested in it, and you can use it and you can do things with it, you can send it, you can buy things, you can store it, you can custody it. So I think that's an important aspect. And once you start doing those transactions, then you start to actually unpack different aspects of the blockchain anyway. You know, you might set up a multi-sig wallet and you get some exposure to cryptography through that process, right? And so all these other different things. So I think that's a great starting point. And obviously there's so many websites and videos and,
do you have any favorites, channels or blogs that you read on a regular?
Yeah, what do I do? I mean, the starting point for anyone who really wants to get deeper into the Bitcoin is Jamson site, Jamson Lop. And it's got a whole bunch of resources on there.
I never heard of this guy. Who is he?
He runs... Casa. Jamson Lop, Bitcoin Resources. So he's got heaps of stuff on there, heaps of links. Mail lists, I usually use Masari, masari.io for most of my research, certainly a starting point anyway. Mm-hmm. And there's some other great, Coinmetrics is really good. What else? There's a whole bunch. I think once you start with a couple, you'll see I mean, the community.
You go down that rabbit hole.
Yeah, you know, and then they will have their, like, these are my weekend reads. And then mail list puts their weekend reads, and you can sort of follow the bunny rabbit through the next article. But yeah, Masari, yeah, great content, great research. Delphi do really good stuff as well. Coinmetrics have a really good data analytics lens. So I find that really valuable in actually sort of looking at the narrative around digital assets or crypto networks, and actually looking at the data and the trends that support those, that story.
Awesome. All right. Thank you so much for your time today.
Thanks, Adriana.
The babies didn't cry.
yeah. Awesome. No, they didn't. And I'm probably due to go down and help now. But it's been great to chat. And yeah, thank you for your time.
Awesome. So thank you.
Thanks.
And that was the excellent Ryan Chris. If you have any questions for Ryan and would like to get in touch, you'll find his social links in the description. For questions, guest suggestions, or just to say hello, you can find me on Twitter at @abelotti, or to send me an email, visit blockchainpropodcast.com. I hope you've enjoyed this episode as much as I enjoyed creating it for you. Have a wonderful day wherever you are, and I will see you in the next book. Bye.